The opinions and statements expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect those of WWDB, its staff, or management.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're in the Delaware Valley. Welcome to Top Lawyer with Sean Quinn. We've got a phenomenal show. It's one of my favorite shows of the month. How are you, sir?
I'm well, Joe. It's great to see you. And, you know, I think one of the things, you know, this is our second show that we've run, Top Lawyer. And I think when we did our opening show, we didn't really – it was probably a failing on my part because you're a consummate professional, me not so much.
Please.
One of the things that I didn't do really well was explain what we're going to be doing in these monthly shows. And, you know, each month, Joe Dougherty and I will be introducing our listeners to lawyers that are making a difference in our community. Some names will be well known. Some names are up and coming rising stars in the business, and they may not be household names just yet. But no matter their notoriety or not, we're going to be introducing you to lawyers that I believe are the best of the best in the legal community in our area. These are people that I respect, people that I trust, and this month's guest is no different. You know, welcome to the program, Michael Murphy. He's the principal of the Murphy Law Group in Philadelphia. And, you know, I'm going to give Mike an opportunity to kind of talk a little bit in a second, but just to kind of introduce who Mike is. Mike's the managing partner of the Murphy Law Group. It's a boutique law firm in Philadelphia, much like my own, but we're different. And Mike's firm focuses exclusively on employment law. Mike and his team are dedicated to protecting the rights of workers, not the employers, not the big businesses, the workers, throughout PA and New Jersey. Mike's entire career has been dedicated to representing the individual. I mean, representing in the practice of employment law. Like many of us that now represent the individual and the worker, Mike started his career on the other side. And he started and did a decade representing businesses and the employers that he now, you know, holds accountable for injustice. He learned their tricks of their trade, much like I did as a young puppy lawyer,
sure.
And made the decision to open up his own firm in 2013. Ironically, when we were going through this, Mike and I opened our firms at the same time. As crazy as that sound, I broke off of another firm, and Mike broke off another firm, and here we are, you know, 11 almost 9 years later, doing this. But you know, Mike's turned his firm from what was a small shop into an actual powerhouse for employment litigation in Philadelphia. The type of work they do is pretty wide-ranging, but it's really specific. Workplace discrimination, sexual harassment, hostile work environment, wrongful termination and retaliation claims, FMLA claims, workers' compensation retaliation claims, overtime class actions, wage and hour violations, non-compete clauses, and whistleblower claims. I always say, he's a real specialist in making sure that businesses are held accountable for mistreating workers and holding them accountable for the type of work they do. Mike and his team make a difference in the lives of countless workers in our community, and he's dedicated to not only helping his clients but also educating others. A big part of what Mike does is, and his team does, is they blog, they talk about these things, the important issues, because, you know, it's really important that as lawyers, we not only help a client, but we help the public at large. And I know I'm making Mike feel uncomfortable with all this lauding, but it's important to know what other lawyers think of you and the work you're doing. And on a personal note, you know, Mike and I share kind of a similarly weird background that we're both, you know, former college athletes. We're both dads and baseball coaches. You know, we somehow balance, you know, the business of law and the practice of law with, you know, becoming the dads we want to be, both, you know, at the home and on the baseball field. And although I will say that Mike has way more street cred than I do when it comes to his baseball coach, he's an actual D1 baseball player.
Really?
Yeah, he's a Scranton guy. University of Scranton, played baseball there, and he's a legit baseball player. I was a football player in college, as you know, and so I just pretend. Without further ado,
yeah.
Mike,
you got
Murphy.
Big shoes to fill here, brother.
I do. I'm worried here.
No. First of all, it's great to have you on the broadcast, and we certainly are ecstatic. Talk about your firm and the fact that and your career, because one of the things you hear Sean talk about, and a lot of great attorneys, and it's a real benefit to their clients. You were educated and trained on learning the other side before you started representing the plaintiff, the individual worker. Talk about that benefit and the ability to have that experience under your belt.
Sure. Number one, it's a privilege and honor to be here with you both.
Pleasure.
I very much appreciate it. Sean, we've been good friends for a long time.
Exactly.
Your friendship means a lot to me, and I'm humbled and honored to be here, so thank you both. So, yeah, I practiced for 10 years as a defense lawyer, and I worked for a very, very good lawyer. And I got a lot of gratitude towards what, you know, he taught me. He taught me how to be a lawyer, taught me how to run a business. And I really learned the other side of the game that I'm doing right now. I learned how cases get defended, what's important in building a case, what's not important. And, ultimately, after 10 years of doing it, I did get burned out, to be transparent. It was starting to become harder and harder to get to the office every day. And
yeah, right.
I realized I needed to make a change, and with the support of my wife and my family, I started my own firm. I actually had 8 cases. I don't know how many you had, Sean, when you did it.
32.
Okay, I had 8 cases, and it's really been a blessing ever since. It's been amazing, and I've built that to what we have now. But I got to tell you, a lot of it has to do with who I've surrounded myself with. I have an amazing staff who have really helped to grow the practice and grow the firm. And we have amazing clients, and we've been able to achieve some very, very good outcomes.
Employment law is such, right now, particularly even during the pandemic and a lot of things that have gone on, with people, it's probably hitting areas you couldn't even imagine with people working remotely. People afraid to go into the office, people with the vaccines. Has that impacted your business and outlook on the different new areas of employment law?
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, people who, maybe want to get into this niche or want to handle employment law, you really just need to be empathetic. It's a big part of being a lawyer in the employment space, because people are coming to you at a very, very terrible part of their life. They've lost their job typically. And you really have to be empathetic. And with COVID, you're absolutely right. It really, at least in the employment area, there's just been so many legal issues that have come up and have needed to be addressed. And it's been a work in progress. And now I'm sure we're going to talk about it. You have the vaccine mandate, which is a whole somewhat complicated issue as well.
Yeah, no, that was it was one of the things that I think all of us were looking for guidance on as employers, right? Mm-hmm. In the early aftermath. And Mike runs a firm, I run a firm, and Mike and I talked about this. Is it something that employers can do? Is it enforceable? And are these things that are going to be things that that business? And I think, Mike, I'll defer to you and on these topics. And I know there was actually just a judge ruling today about whether some administrative rulings can go into effect through OSHA. They may be different and bigger issues, but to deal with the Joe employer that has 10 employees or 20 employees, can they mandate that somebody sure. get a vaccine in order to work there?
Sure. Disclaimer number one: what I say here is not legal advice.
Yeah, right.
But generally speaking, employers can mandate vaccines. They've been doing that for a long time. More specifically, in the healthcare arena, For example, flu shots. So to answer your question, yes, employers can mandate them as a condition of employment. And there are some exceptions to that, one being under the Americans with Disabilities Act. If someone has a medical condition which may prevent them from being able to get a vaccine, that could be an exception. And then there's also an exception under for religious observations. And, you know, we are, just being honest, we're getting, you know, tons and tons of calls every week about individuals who are faced with this issue. And putting aside, you know, whether people should get that, get the vaccine or shouldn't, there are people who are losing their jobs for not getting it. And, you know, it's sometimes heartbreaking to hear that story, just speaking from a human standpoint, putting aside the legalities of it. You know, it's just, you know, it's a tough, very complicated issue, in my opinion.
Are these cases going to the Supreme Court, and are they, in other words, are they impacting what's going on every day in the real world at this point in time? You're right. So many people's lives, you know, people like, we're going to get into one of these, but we talked about union stuff and Philadelphia building trades have a mandate now. You have to, you know, you have to be vaccinated in order to go to work. And we live in an at will state, right?
Correct.
So the question is, does that in, I mean, you can be fired for almost anything. Are decisions that are happening at the Supreme Court level trickling down, or are, you know, are people just, you know, is it open season on anybody who decides not to vax?
Well, look, there's two sides of it. There's number one, you deal with the fact that there is a vaccine mandate that came from the federal government, which is it's a whole separate issue
for the federal employees, right?
It's a constitutional issue. It's coming through OSHA, and that's one side of the coin. Which, if I had to guess, I think there's a potential that those sort of issues might get to the Supreme Court. So yes. Yeah. On the other side, there's this issue of, can an employer mandate the vaccine? And you know, they can, generally speaking, with two exceptions that we discussed.
I mean, it's really unprecedented times in that particular area.
And with the unions, though,
we have a collective bargaining agreement, still, I don't think anybody's fighting this, you know. Right. But I mean, I know that there has to be many of our workers that are not vaccinated. Just when I say many, I'm not the overwhelming majority, but definitely just by the numbers that we have, I'm sure there's a lot of people not vaccinated.
Absolutely. I'm sure there's a percentage of them who, you know, maybe made the decision not to get the vaccine.
Have you had any cases, Mike? Anybody have any, you know, in other words, dealing with this, have you had to represent anybody, or, you know, is it look like you're going to be?
So we're always evaluating all cases. We haven't accepted one yet. You know, again, the avenues are going to be either A, under the Americans with Disabilities Act, if someone has a disability, or B, for a sincere religious belief. And, up until this juncture, there just hasn't been a case yet that we've seen that we felt like we could, get it to a point where we could be successful with it.
Right. I guess there's a lot still to be.
It's one of the most complicated issues I've seen.
Yeah.
In your career, probably. Yeah.
I mean, just absolutely incredible. Sean, talk about, you know, you wanted to go in a direction on the broadcast in regards to employment law. There are so many different facets.
Yeah,
I mean, it's an area, you know, it's an area of law, where, you know, like issues such as workplace discrimination. Like you read them off, but harassment, a number of different areas that people get impacted on a daily basis. Talk about it, Sean.
Yeah, and one of the things that I think is interesting is, I think this is a topic that, you know, before we dive into it, you know, change gears, is how has the transition to a remote workspace impacted the claims that you're seeing coming, you know, from workers? Are sexual harassment claims down? Are hostile work environment claims down from what you're seeing because of, the remote work environment, or have the claims that you're seeing come into your office and people approach you with changed over the past year?
So, no, I mean,
that's surprising to me, but I'm probably not surprised at the same time.
We've been pretty consistent. We, like every business, when COVID first hit, you know, there was 3-4 months where, you know, everything kind of shut down. But since then, it's kind of been business as usual. And I think that's really just because working in a work setting, there's just always issues that come up. And that's related to the dynamics of individuals working with other individuals. And we see a lot, particularly with your smaller and your middle market employers, where there's a lot of statutes that they have to pay attention to. And sometimes, that whether intentional or non-intentional, they just miss things. And that's how cases might come up.
Now, go ahead. Now, recently, I was reading, listening, because I actually do study your work. And because I try to, you know, as part of my practice, understand base level employment issues. Because if I do have somebody that approaches my firm and I need to be able to triage it and say, hey, this is maybe something you want to talk to Mike's office about, right? I was reading about, you know, a blog that you did recently about, you know, a new law that came down in Philadelphia within the past year about employers that are huge businesses that are changing the shifts on these workers on the fly. And I think you said there was a Target store in South Philadelphia that got hit, mm-hmm. not that recent, pretty recently, about with a, I think it was a $22,000 or so sanction, mm-hmm. For violating, and maybe you can kind of, this is because it's an interesting dynamic of this type of law, and I'm probably doing it a terrible, not very well giving you any justice to this, but maybe you can walk through this law, because I think it affects way more workers than we think, because of, I can imagine it affects like the McDonald's workers, the Walmart workers, these big companies that maybe are one, short staffed to begin with, mm-hmm. and two, constantly playing havoc on, you know, their schedules.
Sure. It's a good topic. And here why personally I think it's important is because what it's really designed to do is give people predictability. And
is it scheduling you're talking about?
It's about scheduling. I mean, okay. That's really what it comes down to, giving people notice of what their schedule is going to be. And I think that's important for people just, you know, in their daily lives. I mean, I know we're going to talk about it later, but I always say, like, employers could really avoid a lot of issues if they were just empathetic and and understanding and caring. Three simple traits that I try to have.
Yeah, but it's interesting. It's very interesting. I did a show on immigration yesterday, immigration law. And what's interesting about what you kind of brought up here is this. This is a crazy time right now. Whereas normally you can get a visa coming into the country if it's an educational type situation and a situation where it's like higher employment, you know, somebody who's, you know, it's in engineering and stuff like that. But now we don't have a lot of workers at the lowest levels. I mean, there's no way to put it. And now we have, that particular topic that you're talking about is really complicated at this point, because you walk into a restaurant, you walk into anywhere, you walk across the street, I'm pointing at it right now, I'm not going to say the name, but they got three employees in there. And so, you know, now more than ever, it's important to give these employees an idea of what they might, you know, what their schedules are, because, you know, you might be sitting there going, you got to stay, and they got to pick up your kids. What are you going to do?
Sure. And the leverage is, in my opinion, putting aside, dollars and cents, the leverage has kind of shifted a little bit to employees because it's hard to find good workers.
Absolutely. Well, the immigration attorney who was on the broadcast, his name is Ricky Palantino, and he actually said, I think that we should, there is no visa or there's no application for workers at that level. In other words, in order to apply for jobs that are unskilled labor, there's not a particular type of visa to apply for. My point is, it's very complicated when it comes to the scheduling issue, because there's so few. I guess once the unemployment ended, you thought everybody was coming back. It did not.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and there's a whole host of issues as to why. You know, I was reading a thing about the Great Resignation, you know, this whole argument about a lot of people just resigning. And I think, you know, social media has changed a lot, and what people want to do with their lives has changed a lot. But Mike brings up you touched upon it about being empathetic, and we're going to get into that in the second half of the show today. But just to kind of, you know, wind up on this it's called the Fair Work Week Law. And I think it's important that people, you know, people that are listening to this show might be that Target worker, right? Oh, yeah. They might be that Walmart worker, and they just accept it that this is how it is. Mm-hmm. Let's throw
in that Amazon worker, whose schedules get changed in the middle of the night. Mm-hmm. Like that little app, they get up in the morning, next thing you know, they were supposed to work at noon. Now they're supposed to be in at 8 a.m. Talk about that.
Sure. But let me comment, though, because there's not just that statute. There's many statutes that workers aren't aware of their rights. Most importantly would be the Fair Labor Standards Act and the Pennsylvania Minimum Wage Act. And, you know, my firm handles many, many cases under those statutes. We've represented groups of people in the healthcare industry, automotive industry, the mortgage industry. That's another statute where employees don't necessarily know their rights. They don't know that they might be entitled to compensation for certain things, certain work activities that they do. They don't know that maybe they're entitled to overtime on a shift differential that they get during their shift. There might be work they're performing during breaks that they're not being paid for. And, you know, this is just like the other statute we discussed. It's another one that people just aren't paying attention to.
Yeah, I think one of your blogs you talked about is anytime you're on the employee's premises, right?
Right.
That
would this be wage theft we're talking about?
Correct. Yes.
Yeah.
And
it's a big issue.
Yeah. Yes. What talk about that and how big an issue that is?
So it's big. It's about I would say it's a little more than 50% of our practice, and we handle those cases both on an individual and a class basis. Class basis meaning we're representing groups of people who weren't paid right, and it happens. You know, whether it's intentional or not, it happens across the United States that employees are routinely not paid what they're entitled to under the law. And that's my most, of all the cases we handle, I'm most passionate about those cases.
Yeah, and as you should, because it not only affects one worker at a time, mm-hmm. it affects entire industries. It affects entire communities at a time. And I always say part of the awesomeness of what we do as lawyers mm-hmm. is that we can sometimes spread the justice around, right? Share it amongst an entire communities and make employers, hopefully for future generations of workers, mm-hmm. provide a better workplace, a fairer workplace, and a more empathetic workplace.
Let's talk about this, the wage theft type situation and the different areas that it happens. Worker misclassification, which is a big one.
Huge.
And of course, you know the things that you're talking about. I do the labor show, fellas. I'm right up on top of it, right?
I give Joe the thumbs up.
It's a
good topic.
But let's talk about it, because I've done a lot of shows on it. I am pretty schooled on that. Okay. I want to just lay it out there. So we do a lot of shows together. We talk about a lot of the injured workers and those who get injured at the negligence of somebody else. We've done a lot of that. But there are so many areas of employment law that I like to, you know, defer to the professionals here at the table. But this is an area that I've dealt with. What is worker misclassification?
So workers misclassification is where an employer will classify an employee as exempt from overtime, when in reality they wouldn't necessarily, because of their job duties and how they're paid, they're really in reality entitled to overtime compensation. So in this sort of case, we can either file on an individual basis if it's just one individual who was misclassified, or on a group basis, if there's a class of people who are misclassified, and we can pursue what they actually should have been paid under the law. And we can generally speaking go back up to 3 years if it's been a willful violation. And the law provides that liquidated damages can be awarded in certain cases. So you get actually double what you're owed. So classic example would be someone's given the title of manager and they're paid, you know, just using a number, you know, $37,000.
Like office manager, right?
Correct. And they don't have anybody that reports to them. They're not really a manager and they're working 80 hours a week because they do everything for that business.
Yeah.
They do manual labor. They do mailings. They just do everything. And in that sort of situation, that's a classic example of a misclassification case.
You talk about, you see, I'm thinking about also the fact that people want to classify people as subcontractors.
Yes.
You know, so we've had, yes. We've done a lot of shows. Well, I mean, I've had a lot of situations where I've, you know, especially in the union world, and I'm not going to get into it. I'm looking, I can't see the building right now, but it's on City Avenue where a lot of individuals were classified as subcontractors, but they had to be in on time. They had to follow the rules. Talk about that.
So sure, that's another common issue that comes up, and an employer will simply pay the employee on a 1099, so they're not covered by unemployment. They may not be then entitled to, you know, healthcare benefits or other privileges that an employee may get.
Workers' compensation.
Yes, good point. Yeah. Very good point. Workers' compensation. And again, they might be working 50, 60 hours a week, and they're just getting straight time. And we can then get involved and go back and try to get the overtime that should have been paid to them during that time period.
In a lot of ways, coming from the labor world, which I do, individuals like Mike Murphy, in a lot of ways, represent individuals that don't have representation from a labor leader. You know, and I've said this before, you're almost like the labor representative for individuals that aren't represented. Talk about that.
You're absolutely right. So number one, I love unions. We have represented members of unions.
Sure.
So that does happen. But they do have extra protections that an employee who's not in the union doesn't have. So I agree with you that most of our individuals that we're representing are working in non-union shops.
Sure.
And you know, we're trying to look out for them.
Well, what ends up happening is, I mean, you don't see a lot of sexual harassment at the labor level because you have a labor leader who'd be right out there on a job for the most part, but not every union. So I come from the building trades. We do a 5-year apprenticeship. Now we do, by the way, when the labor show, I have everybody on. Everybody, like, so we've 120 some unions, doesn't matter what union. Okay, I do a lot of the private unions, a lot of the public unions. We're a lot of building trades, but you know, the government unions, all those things. But there are different types of union workers. Everybody thinks that the union, you know, they'll call it the union, like we're all out of the same union, even though most of us are out of, you know, the AFL-CIO is what encompasses it all. But even though somebody's in a union, doesn't mean they really understand everything. So, I mean, you've represented union workers.
Sure.
Talk about that.
Sure. So, number one, they're going to have certain rights under the collective bargaining agreement. And most importantly, typically, there's a just cause provision in there, which means you can only get let go for just cause, which is usually typically defined in the collective bargaining agreement. So when I previously said about added protections, that's the added protection. You do have a sense of job security that you may not otherwise have if you're not in the union.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because workers' compensation, and we'll get into that. We're gonna go to the break in a minute, but that's an area. When you have a collective bargaining agreement, you typically, you know, you're working in a union and you have, like you said, some added benefits and all that and representation, but there are some clauses in some workers' compensation clauses in some of the that actually are more stricter than they would if you didn't have it. So now, you know, we'll get into all those things. We're going to have more from Top Lawyer with Sean Quinn and his guest Mike Murphy after the break.
Suffering a personal injury as a result of another's negligence, such as a motor vehicle accident, a slip or trip and fall, a workplace injury, a product liability matter, a medical malpractice, or nursing home neglect, can be a devastating experience that can turn your life upside down. At the Quinn Law Group, founding partner Sean Quinn utilizes his extensive experience as one of Philadelphia and New Jersey's premier personal injury and trial attorneys every day to recover millions and seek justice for his clients injured in matters just like these. If you, a loved one, or someone you know has been injured as a result of someone else's negligence, or if someone you know was the victim in a wrongful death matter, contact Sean Quinn of the Quinn Law Group now at quinnlawyers.com or call 877-659-6070. That's quinnlawyers.com or 877-659-6070 and get justice and the recovery you deserve.
Charlie died after taking a single pill that turned out to be counterfeit.
He was having back issues, and it was a counterfeit poisonous pill.
Websites and social media selling fake medicines may look legitimate, but they're not. Drugs from these rogue pharmacies could have fillers like sawdust or deadly fentanyl.
He died in less than 15 minutes after taking the pill.
Now there's a free tool that can give you peace of mind. At safe.pharmacy, enter the pharmacy web address and you'll know if the site you're using is safe.
If you're not getting your prescriptions from a legitimate source, that next dose you take could be your last.
We just don't want other people to go through what we're going through. It's just horrific.
Go to safe.pharmacy. Find out about fake medicine on social media and if the site you're buying from is safe.
When a child is diagnosed with cancer, the last thing parents should have to worry about is how to pay for it. This is a St. Jude moment.
Calvin got diagnosed June 10th of 2018. He has Rhabdomyosarcoma sarcoma, a soft tissue cancer. One oncologist told us if it was my son, we'd go to St. Jude. And within 24 hours, we were on a plane headed here. It's hard to fathom what St. Jude has done for us. They've really given our family hope. For the donors out there, it's just amazing. I never thought we would be in this place. And it's people like you that help us and help St. Jude provide for a family like ours. St. Jude is like the gold at the end of a rainbow. And we are so grateful and thankful for everything.
Finding cures, saving children. Learn more at stjude.org.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Top Lawyer with Sean Quinn. Sean's guest is Michael Murphy, renowned employment attorney in the city of Philadelphia and Stop beyond.
We just like to make you feel uncomfortable,
I know.
Mike.
I'm going to have to start coming here every day. Yeah. Right?
We're good about this. Listen, we're just calling it the way it is.
That's right.
But, you know,
if only our wives thought of us this way, right?
Right. Usually, if you had three guys on a show, they would call it the Liars Club, right?
Right?
I mean, whatever we're saying, we're not telling the truth. But having said that, we're talking about worker misclassification and wage theft. I've heard of, and I'm not going to say the name of the place because I know they remedied the situation, and I don't believe in beating somebody to death after they, in other words, there was a restaurant who, at one point was taking the tips of the employers for some particular reason, mm-hmm. and they remedied that situation. They paid a heck of a fine, mm-hmm. and they dealt with the situation. But that, you know, that's another. There's so many different areas of wage theft. I mean, you know, it's, you know, you talk about working overtime and not getting paid, worker misclassification, all those things. I mean, it's endless.
Sure. So it's a great point. Restaurant workers, number one, look, I love the restaurant industry and, they had some difficult times in the pandemic. So, you know, during this holiday season, take care of your servers. When you're eating out, I try to do that. And, you're absolutely right. There are restaurants which are not following the law when it comes to tip credits and properly paying their employees. And we've represented many restaurant workers. And it's unfortunate. And again, I always say some of it's intentional, but some of it's unintentional. And
right.
It's just
all hands on deck type of thing, right?
Yeah, they just didn't understand. They made a mistake. And, you know, I would say most employers, when you end up calling them out on it and they have competent counsel on the other side, those cases get worked out. They get resolved. The employee is paid what they're owed, and everybody moves forward.
Sean, talk about your workplace, because you guys were all working out to get, you know, work together, Thanksgiving, giving back to the community. And I tell you one thing I recognize from those Facebook pages, and you can tell when people, I mean, everybody looked happy. They looked like it was a team environment. That's important to you.
Yeah, it's really critical, and it's something that Mike and I really share a passion about, is that, you know, Mike mentioned, you know, taking care of your servers. Well, it's something that I think why we're such good friends is because we practice what we preach. We walk the walk, you know, and we, if we say we're going to be empathetic, we have to believe it. We have to live it. And, you know, and listen, every year we my firm sponsors a turkey drop. This year we gave out 150 plus turkeys between, you know, our group with Odin Properties that we work with, the Mercy Neighborhood Ministries, and Antioch of Calvary Chapel Church. You know, and each year it's something that grows. But this was the first year. My son always joins me with those trips.
That's great.
I always say that's the only reason you get to play hooky
is when you're
doing charity. And helping others. But my entire team was there this year, and it was just like an awesome sight to see, to have, you know, lawyers, paralegals, assistants going to clean out ShopRite and clean out this Sam's Club and riding around with their SUVs filled with turkeys and pies and gift cards. And going from four different locations throughout the city. And, I'd like to say that we have a really good work environment, and I think what really makes our team special, and it's a lot like Mike's team, is that they love what they do, and they love helping others, and that's so important.
And I'm assuming that type of environment, and that so ironically, I was in the nightlife business for 15 years. I owned a nightclub, believe it or not.
Wow.
In Center City, Philadelphia. We had some employers there that were 14 years with us. And I was proud as hell of that, right?
It's amazing.
I mean, you know, when they were happy at work, you know, that creates an environment that, you know, I mean, it's a team environment and everybody feels good about themselves, and it really shows, I guess, in both of your businesses as attorneys. You get people calling your facilities.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing I did learn is that the girl at my front desk was a problem for a long time, and I didn't know it, right? She was just rude to everybody.
Yep.
But I didn't find out for years how many hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people that, you know, that was not an easy job. Don't get me wrong. You know, it was not an easy job. But the point I'm making is having that attitude in your workplace and in your environment has to be, you know, you have to be able to, like right now you're on the radio. Well, you know, your team is exuding your sentiments to those people calling, because people are calling both of your facilities, And sometimes in some of the most sensitive situations possible.
Yeah. So number one, I try to thank my team as often as possible, and try to be kind, understanding, praise them, because truthfully, they're a huge part of you know, how I was able to grow my firm.
Sure.
And they mean the world to me, and I try to tell them that every day. So it's super important. And
the irony would be ridiculous if you're an informant attorney.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, the nicer you are, in my opinion, the better productivity.
Absolutely.
You get.
I totally agree.
You know, and you go back, what, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, I think it was a completely different mindset. I think, you know, people have realized that kindness, being nice, being a gentleman,
treating people the way you want to be treated.
Yeah.
What are some of the... The most I'm going to say the biggest mistakes employers make, and I say this because there's two types of, well, there's three, but you know, you have your small employers, and then you have your corporate employers. They all have HR departments, okay? But small employers, which America's built up 50% of small businesses. Now, some businesses, a small business has 50 employees, but some have a handful. And now all of a sudden you have some rough and tumble guys, you know, who go into business but don't, and I'm not, listen, I'm a rough and tumble guy myself, but the point is, you know, you live by the same rules almost as everybody else. What are some of the mistakes, better way of putting it, that smaller employers or newer employers who are not corporate structured make every day?
You see a lot of mistakes by your mid-level manager who's maybe not trained on federal and state laws, who reacts in a angry fashion.
Yeah. And bad language, all the crazy stuff.
Oh, terrible, terrible language. Yeah, I mean, obviously we've handled many sexual harassment cases, you see that. You see a lot of that, and then you see a lot of stuff with leave, medical leave under the Family Medical Leave Act,
right?
Where an individual, for whatever reason, needs to take medical leave. God forbid, cancer. Back issues. They need a hip replacement, all sorts of stuff. And again, if you have 50 or more employees, there's certain entitlements that employee may be entitled to. And you see middle market and sometimes large companies make mistakes under the statute because it's complicated. Under the statute, the Family Medical Leave Act, you can also take leave intermittently. So like on an as needed basis. And we see situations where an employee may be entitled to intermittent leave year after year. And I think sometimes employers get frustrated by that. And then, you know, they start to look for a reason to get rid of that particular employee.
It's an interesting point you make. Right, that point alone, you could go in 60 different ways,
yes,
right?
Yes.
But when somebody finds themselves in that type of situation or harassment, let's just talk about the basic stuff. Somebody feels like they're being sexually harassed or discriminated against, okay? One of the things you deal with is retaliation and all those things. Let's talk about the fact that somebody's making innuendos to somebody, that particular situation, they're uncomfortable. A, do they have to report it?
They should, yes. Again, this isn't legal advice, but generally speaking, if you are experiencing harassment in the workplace, you should absolutely report it. I always encourage people to put it in writing because people, unfortunately, sometimes have failed memories down the road. So you should put that in writing. And you're absolutely right. We've represented many people who have raised those sort of issues and they've lost their jobs. And that is absolutely not fair, and that is unlawful, and that's a classic example of retaliation. Because legally speaking, when you make that complaint, you're engaging in what's called protected activity,
right?
Under certain statutes.
Well, so let's. I'm just thinking, if it was me in that situation, you have to. It's my opinion that would be if you feel like you're going through something. If it was me, I would call Mike Murphy first and I'd say, listen, are the consultations free?
Yes, they are. Yeah, we're happy to talk to anybody to evaluate whether there is something that we can help with. Absolutely.
So my point is you contact, Mike Murphy, you find out, you get the lay of the land and learn your rights. That's a big part of it. If you empower yourself, you know what I mean? And your rights. And at that point, is there any evidence or documentation somebody should be taking? You report it.
Sure.
Okay. I before I'd even report it would call a good attorney like yourself. Mm-hmm. So I knew exactly what my rights were and what my responsibilities were. Then and this is under a harassment situation. And then you would report it. How do you document those types of things?
Sure. I always recommend people should keep a timeline of events that have happened, especially if it's been an ongoing issue. You should really, have a pad of paper or send yourself emails summarizing what happened on that particular day. I think that's very important. That's contemporaneous records of what had happened. So that, I think that's always good advice. And then again, anything that you're raising with your employer, it's always good to keep that in writing.
So, but when you do it, you should do it on your personal computer, correct? In other words, in case.
Yes.
It raises a lot of issues. Yeah.
Yeah. You have no expectation of privacy in the workplace.
Correct.
When you're using an employer's computer system.
Even if it's their laptop that they send you home with, it's theirs.
It's theirs. So that's a good point. Yeah. You should keep those notes on your private computer.
Yeah. And so having said that, talk about what people are afraid to lose their jobs. Okay. And there are so many great areas that you practice on your website, wrongful termination, retaliation, all those things. But we only have an hour show, okay?
Right.
And this thing is lining up, properly. And we're in PA right now, so that's an at-will state. Once you report that, okay, once you report a sexual harassment situation, can you be fired? You mentioned it's protected, but...
In my opinion, that would be unlawful if someone fired somebody for reporting sexual harassment in the workplace. I believe that's protected activity under relevant federal and state statutes, and a legal claim could be brought for that. The one thing I want to point out, just to circle back real quick, is that there is a different analysis on whether that sexual harassment is coming from a... supervisor as opposed to a colleague.
Yeah, right. Talk about that.
So if it's a supervisor, it's a different analysis. And if it's something that's been going on for a while and it's severe and pervasive, it could rise to the level of being able to bring a legal claim.
How do you determine damages and, those types of situations?
So, look, damages could be anything a jury's willing to, award in accordance with the statutes. But in a severe sexual harassment case, they could be entitled to compensatory damages. And that's as a result of needing to get medical treatment because of the trauma and the horrible stuff that they were subjected to. And then you may be entitled to a punitive damage award. And that's all based on the size of the employer. So those cases, we've handled some very disgusting cases like that, and they're not fun to handle. I'm sure
there's an emotional toll on the individual.
I think the individuals who were unfortunately subjected to that get some sort of closure at the end when the case is over.
What about if it's a coworker?
So if it's a coworker,
who may even have seniority, or just maybe that employee started 2 weeks ago, but he's a buddy with the boss.
Sure. So if it's a coworker, you need to report it. You need to give your employer an opportunity to remedy it.
Yep.
So they have to investigate the allegations and take appropriate remedial action if they think it's necessary. And if they don't, then that would rise to the level of you might have a legal claim at that point.
What do you call retaliation?
Retaliation is quite simply, I raised a concern with my employer, which is protected by statute, and I get terminated. That's the classic definition.
What about if all of a sudden, the standards and the way you're being treated?
Yeah, that's a good point, because it could be the employer's now trying to set a record to terminate you. So they put you on a performance improvement plan. Unjustifiably, like they had no basis to do that.
Yeah.
And then under that performance plan, the objectives you need to meet to maintain your employment, you can't achieve. So that's a form of retaliation. Another form would be a demotion. Okay, you're at one level and they move you down to another level, or a reduction in pay. We're gonna dock you, $2 an hour.
How about if they're just demeaning you and treating you like crap? From what I understand, and tell me it's not against the law for the boss to be not a nice person. And sometimes...
It's a great point.
Brings us into an area we want to
talk
about.
Yes, that's a good segue.
Go ahead. Tell them that just being mean doesn't generally expose an employer to a claim.
Yeah. So, unfortunately, there are jerks in this world.
Yeah.
Unfortunate, but it's a truth. And if that jerk is being a jerk to everybody, There's no legal claim.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's the distinction.
But what if he's just being a jerk to you?
Then that's different than if he's being a jerk to you because you're a female or because you have a disability or because you're 65 years old or because of your race. Then that could rise to the level of a potential claim.
Yeah, that brings us to something we wanted to talk about today.
Sure.
And I think it's something that lawyers sort of get a stigma for is being jerks. And it's something that Mike's real passionate about, and I'm real passionate about it as well. Mike, let's dive into that because, you know, I think it's something that is indicative of your leadership style at your firm, as well as advice you give just to people and lawyers in general.
Sure. So, in fact, I just sent an email to my staff about this last week. I personally think a lot of my growth can be with my firm and my practice is just being nice. I've built some fabulous relationships with defense lawyers, and you know, just be nice, be kind. Hey, I need an extension. I had this come up in my life. Absolutely. Whatever you need.
That's an interesting point. Respect between lawyers. In the process, does that, besides being personally beneficial, do you find that, you know, even helps the case?
Yeah. I mean, it certainly can. Here's the distinction. Mm-hmm. Mike, by being nice, and Sean, by being nice, us, by being nice guys, does not mean we're pushovers, right?
Right.
We are going to represent our clients, but we are also humans, and it's a small legal community. Mm-hmm. The defense lawyers that Mike deals with on almost all his cases are from the same 3, 4, 5 firms. The firms I deal with are the same folks. I was dealt with some real nasty lawyers as a young puppy lawyer and some really lawyers that were treating me with kindness and treating me with respect.
And professionalism.
Mm-hmm. And I think to some extent, professionalism is somewhat of a dying art in general in life. You know, the way we talk to each other,
yes.
The way we don't show respect to each other.
Yeah. Especially during
and online will just drive you crazy. You just try not to like kind of engage it.
Well, that would be a good example of somebody who, you know, online, you know, bullying. I personally believe this, okay? I believe that bullying is one of the most, you know, impactful, devastating types of behavior that you know, that a child or an adult can find. Is that a type of harassment?
It absolutely can be, especially if it's specifically and directed at a particular person by another person. And bullying's terrible. And I know that I think in years to come, there might actually be statutes passed that deal with that sort of thing.
I believe, I'm not kidding you when I say this, I believe it's one of the most far-reaching, impacting types of behavior that impact adults from when they were young children. I mean, it's, you know, it's far-reaching and long-lasting. But Sean, you're talking about professionalism and those things. How about in front of a jury, for example? Now, I know that you know, Mike, do you often find yourself in front of juries?
Yeah, employment cases can absolutely get to a trial and a jury.
Go ahead.
Yeah, sorry, go ahead, Sean.
No. And I think, you know, being the nice guy, okay, can in some circles have a negative connotation, but in our business, in speaking in front of people, they like the nice guy, the one that is constantly, you know, working with opposing counsel, the one that looks like they have respect for a jury, for the judge. It's such a way to live by.
We only have 2 minutes left, believe it or not. This has been the fastest hour in radio. But it's such a great point you make, Sean. And I can imagine being in front of, I'm sure you've both been in situations where you guys exude niceness, but you're tough, you know, in regards, you know, you represent your clients in a very passionate way. However, I'm sure you've seen individuals in front of juries that
terrible behavior.
I mean, you know, like, and you got to be shaking your head, going, "You got to be kidding me," because you're trying to win the jury over.
I will tell you, my first job as a lawyer was
working for a judge, and I got to observe lawyers be bad lawyers, and how to I got to see some good lawyering, but mostly bad lawyering in terms of just their preparation, the way that they treated the job,
yeah,
the way that they prepared for their job, and ultimately the way they treated human, you know, just, I can tell a lot from somebody just by how they treat the bailiff.
Absolutely.
And the court staff.
Oh, I mean, at a restaurant, the way they treat the server.
It's so cute. It's so true.
Mike, if you would, your contact information at the firm, if anybody wants to get in touch, sure. And the name of the firm and all that.
Sure. Murphy Law Group. You could see us at phillyemploymentlawyer.com. Office number is 267-273-1054. And look, I very much appreciate both of you having me today.
We're going to probably have to have you come back for a second segment at
Absolutely.
Some point.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, I literally...
Joe's got about 100 more questions
I do. It was, and we really stayed on some similar paths, but you were right. I mean, this is going to be a great show, and it is.
Can I say one more thing?
Yeah, sure.
Because I don't know who's listening. I just want to say one thing. So listen, anybody out there who's struggling, lost their job, in a divorce, addiction, depression, please hang in there. People are pulling for you. Have faith, believe, and just do the right thing. Just take the next right step, and I assure you everything's going to work out, okay?
Well said. Well said, Mike.
And you know, it leads into, what do we got, 30 seconds?
We got about 15 seconds.
All right,
you get your contact information.
Yeah,
our host.
It's quinnlawyers.com, 877-QUINN-LAW. Or you can always email me personally at sean@quinnlawyers.com.
Okay, we probably got about 10 seconds left. You wanted to say something.
All right, no, listen, you know, on that note, you know, this is the last show before Christmas.
Yeah.
Everyone have a happy Hanukkah, Merry Christmas, and a happy New Year, and we'll see you on the other side of the in 2022.
Well said. I want to thank everybody for tuning in to Top Lawyer with Sean Quinn. We want to thank Sean's guest, Mike Murphy of the Murphy Law Group. On behalf of Sean and Mike, I want to thank everybody for listening. And of course, on behalf of Sean, have a great holiday season. We'll talk to you next time.